Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to talk about a couple of very important topics in the course of the program today, as we generally do, starting with the issue of Ukraine. What's actually going on there? What do we know about what's actually going on there? What are we being told is actually going on there, and how to sort it all to hopefully advance America's vital interests as best we can? To work through such questions, I'm very pleased to have with us a man who I have come over many years to admire greatly and respect for his policy acumen as well as his life experiences. His name is Dr. Stephen Brein. He served back in the day when men were men in the Pentagon with me as the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. He went on to become a prominent figure in the defense industrial sector. He has served on Capitol Hill with distinction. These days, I'm proud to say he is a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy and the contributor to the driving force behind, as well as a contributor to a very important book, Stopping a Taiwan Invasion, about which we'll talk momentarily. But before we do that, let's talk about Ukraine. Steve Brein, it's good to have you with us for that purpose. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. Glad to be with you, Frank.
So you've written a piece in Asia Times about a possible spring offensive in Ukraine with a very dire warning that it could be a death trap, as you put it, for both the United States and NATO. Talk about all this, if you would, Steve, against the backdrop of this recent trove of leaked documents and what they say about what's the state of play in Ukraine at the moment.
Well, I don't have direct access to the documents, so mostly what I get are what press has to say about the documents. But more or less, they are sort of confirming that this is a very risky proposition, this offensive that the Ukrainians are planning. It's anticipated, and I'll put it that in those terms, that this offensive could start as early as May. It will probably be in the southern part of Ukraine, in the Russian-controlled areas, probably in the Kherson area, maybe in the Zaporizhzhia area, or both. We don't know for sure. Well, that's basically what is anticipated. The problem for the Ukrainians, and I think these reports or documents confirms it pretty much, is it's really rolling the dice that they're in a lot of trouble militarily. They have depleted their forces. They're using third stringers now. Their training is not what it should be. Their equipment is pretty good because the West is supplying and dumping it in, but it's going to be very hard to maintain that equipment on the battlefield because it's not something they're used to. You know, they spent their entire careers on Russian equipment, and Western equipment is different. So there's real challenges technologically, but there also is a challenge because the Russians have gotten good at what they're doing. They have air superiority pretty much. Their artillery is very, very strong. Their generaling of the war, the management of the war, has improved. And I think the Pentagon smells the fact that the Ukrainian offensive could fail. Or even if it succeeds, it can succeed with very little gain. And the net consequence for Ukraine is to put them in a terrible position.
You've talked about possibly having as many as 60,000,
yes,
men under arms.
That's the general number.
In order for them to conduct offensive operations, presumably they have to mass those forces, Steve, I guess, and there may be some maneuver involved as well, but still there's going to have to be some concentration of forces. And that's a killing field, I think, for Russian artillery and air power. Would it not be?
Well, the more they mass, the more they take the risk of being blasted out of existence. There are going to be 12 brigades involved, 9 of which are Western supplied, and three of which are still Russian equipment. But they can't talk to each other. You know, they haven't practiced mobilization in that sense. So how it will work on the battlefield is anybody's guess, but it's not going to be very, very pretty.
Yeah. Well, if it's very costly, I think it's going to be.
Well, they're already taking tremendous losses. You know, if you go up to the battle at Bakhmut, the losses are terrific. I mean, very heavy losses. You know, one of the things that comes out of these papers for the first time, actually, is to say that the Ukrainian losses are much greater than Russian losses. 7-1.
We've been hearing very much the opposite to this point, have we not?
Oh, yeah, because the propaganda mill has been saying, oh, yeah, you know, Russians are being crushed. They're taking tremendous casualties. The Ukrainians are doing really, very well, all that sort of thing, and they're 10 feet tall. Well, it turns out they're not 10 feet tall. They're good fighters, and they're not taking anything away from them. But they're paying a very high price, and the 7-1 is not a very good ratio.
No, it's a terrible.
And some people think it's more like 10-1.
Yeah, Steve, let me just back the lens up for a second and ask the question that I think is on a lot of people's minds: what happens, as far as U.S. interests are concerned, if Ukraine does in fact go down to defeat, either because the offensive doesn't perform as hoped, or simply because the Russians continue to grind the Ukrainians to a pulp?
Well, it's a very good question, Frank. You know, if I had a crystal ball, I would put it right up in front here and look into it and see what I could find. But I think it would be a huge defeat for the United States. It would be a tremendous defeat for NATO. I think it would really terribly discredit NATO. Which means our European partners may start to run for cover. Some of them are already starting to run for cover. So it's not a pretty picture from that perspective. As for Ukraine, no one knows. I mean, the best scenario, I guess, if the Russians win, is to put a Russian-oriented government in Kiev, and, you know, that'll be the end of it. That would be the best scenario. The worst scenario is that somehow Ukraine gets partitioned, which I think would be very bad. But anyway, that's the best we can do right now.
So if those are the underlying realities, as you see them, and let's just say for the purpose of discussion that they are, does this argue for the United States to be continuing to pump in both equipment and, some would argue, personnel as well?
Well, I don't think so. I think that it argues for trying to get a peace deal with the Russians and call it a day before things get out of hand.
Which would lead to
getting out of hand.
Partition.
Hmm?
Which would lead to partition of
Ukraine. No, it could lead to just a settlement. Maybe to recognize the territories, to find some boundaries that can be agreed on.
But wouldn't that, as a practical,
the Ukraine for the future,
Steve, wouldn't that as a practical matter mean, you know, the areas that are now occupied by the Russians remain their part, and therefore,
and of course, you know, this, if you look at what's going on militarily, that's what the Russians are trying to do, is straighten the lines, you know, create a border so that they can put an end to this war. I think that's, you know, logical from their point of view. From our point of view, it's not logical to keep putting all this equipment into the Ukrainian army because we don't have it. We're running out of equipment. The reports all say that. And we're cheating ourselves in terms of being able to defend Europe or to defend the Pacific.
Yeah. We're going to turn to the Pacific after a brief break. We'll be right back with more with Dr. Stephen Bryan. Stay tuned. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Biden administration says it has a problem with, quote, flagrant violations of our nation's sovereignty, unquote. That's the justification given for shutting down an overseas Chinese police station it says was operating illegally in New York City and arresting its alleged proprietors. Last September, a Spanish think tank alerted the world to this operation, used to recruit, coerce, and repatriate Chinese nationals. Unfortunately, the far greater problem is that Team Biden is actively pursuing policies that will not only violate U.S. sovereignty, they will destroy it. In negotiations with the World Health Organization and the United Nations, the people doing business as Joe Biden are proposing to allow these organizations respectively to dictate what constitutes public health emergencies and crises here and what we must do about them. Our enemies call this global governance, but it's a formula for enslaving us. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back. Dr. Stephen Bryan is in the house, I'm pleased to say. He is a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. He is also one of the co-authors of Stopping a Taiwan Invasion. And having talked about the necessity for us to husband our military capabilities, armaments and the like, especially in the face of the distinct possibility, if not the virtual certitude, that the Chinese Communist Party has in mind opening up another front in what some are calling the Third World War in the Western Pacific and perhaps beyond. We wanted to talk with Steve Bryan about that possibility and what we should be doing to try to deter an attack by the Chinese if we can. And Steve Bryan, we were talking about the trove of intelligence documents that have been put into the public domain in the context of Ukraine in the previous segment. And I wanted to talk with you a little bit about insights into the Taiwan question and what might be in prospect there in light of some of the information that's been revealed as well. Yeah. Talk about that, if you would.
Sure, Frank. Look, the report says, these reports say, that Taiwan has some serious challenges. One of them being air defenses. They don't have adequate air defenses. That's been known for some time, but the U.S. has very few air defense systems it can offer to the Taiwanese, even, you know, although we have a few, but they haven't, there's been no transactions in that area. So Taiwan's not getting that. It's not getting a lot of armaments that are needed by Taiwan to fight off a potential invasion. HIMARS, the guided rocket system, which would be very helpful to the Taiwanese, they've been told they're not going to get it because there aren't any. It's as plain as that. Gave them all to Ukraine.
What there are have gone to Ukraine.
Yeah, all in Ukraine. So, I mean, yeah, in 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 or 5 years, yeah, possible. But right now, no. And of course, if we take it out of our own stocks to support Ukraine at this stage, it will be a disaster for Taiwan. So they're not getting stuff they need. The F-16s that they've ordered, the new ones, are delayed. By the way, I don't understand that. I think it's a political decision by the administration, a bad one, to deny Taiwan those aircraft because they need them very badly. They have aircraft now that are 20, 30 years old. And while they're being worked on and improved, they're still 20, 30 years old. They're not up to the same level as the new ones. So, I mean, the Chinese...
To say nothing of what the Chinese are bringing to bear at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, China has modernized its military. And it's got stealth aircraft. It's got fighter bombers. It's got bombers. It's got everything. Lots of it. So, you know, it's clear to me that Taiwan doesn't survive a Chinese invasion unless they can do two things, or unless two things happen. One, that Taiwan can hold off a Chinese attack. And secondly, that the U.S. is prepared to come in and help Taiwan with the U.S. military. That's the only way. If Taiwan's on its own, you know, it's a tiny place. It's 25, 26 million people on an island, highly exposed to just because it's so close to China, the Chinese mainland. So it's exposed to everything the Chinese have. It's very tough business, very dangerous situation. And it has huge implications because Taiwan is, the island itself is part of the, what's called the first island chain that provides the buffer against Chinese expansion. And if you lose Taiwan, which is the most important of those islands, you lose control of the first island chain.
Which in turn puts at risk which in turn the second island which, chain. And
pushes us out of the Pacific, I think.
Yeah. So, Steve, as you've made clear in your book, which was written in consultation with a number of very senior, now retired military officers with experience in the region,
right,
this places a premium on deterring the Absolutely Chinese attack right. in the first place. Give us a sort of update as to what that needs to be. I mean, obviously getting F-16s there, getting air defenses there would be among the things that...
The most important thing doesn't cost any money, or very little. And that is a common command structure. So that we coordinate with Taiwan and with Japan and with Korea and all the others, and so that we're able to operate a defense. Right now,
does not exist today.
Doesn't exist at all. We provide a little bit of training to Taiwan, but that's about it.
How about with respect to some of those others nations you've mentioned? Not the Taiwanese, but the Japanese.
Not there either. I mean, we do some military exercises with Japan, and those are very important. But there's no common command structure. Japan is not integrated with the Pacific Command, PACOM, at all, and nor is Korea, for that matter. It's really a huge mistake to think that we can fight a war with a blindfold on. You can't do it.
Well, and again, what goes to the heart of this, as you know so well, Dr. Stephen Bryan, is perception of the Chinese as to whether this is a doable do, as they say, or whether it's too hard. And that is a weakness that is obviously going to convey a sense of opportunity and an exploitable one at that.
Well, I'm not sitting in China in you know their decision making councils, but if I were, I would be hearing an argument from some of the generals and admirals saying, "Hey, this is a window of opportunity. If we don't take it, we'll not get it again in the future, probably. So we should do it now." So there's going to be a lot of pressure on Xi Jinping to consider an active attack now. The U.S. is tied down in Ukraine. It doesn't have spare parts or supplies, so it's highly diverted. It hasn't done the things it should have done to strengthen our deterrence in the Pacific. This is a golden opportunity.
And then they've got Joe Biden in as commander-in-chief.
I don't understand, you know, he says, well, we're going to defend Taiwan. But actually, his administration says the other way around. Defend Taiwan.
That's right. The only thing I think I would quibble about, and I don't think it's more than a quibble, is the pressure seems to be coming from Xi Jinping as much as it is on Xi Jinping.
I don't know that. I mean, yeah, you may be right, you may be wrong. It doesn't really matter.
He's making it pretty clear that he's intent on pursuing this program. So,
well, he's making it clear he wants Taiwan back.
He does, and he's willing to do whatever it takes to get it back.
That's
it. And he's got, in addition, as we often talk about on this program, Stephen, I'm sure you know, some internal considerations that may be operating as well as the external window of opportunity. And all of that argues for reinforcing our position and our friends in the region. Because if Ukraine teaches us nothing else, obviously it is that you don't want to have to fight a war if you can avoid it in the first place.
That's what we were taught in school. Absolutely. Yeah, Frank.
Yeah, the
administration
doesn't understand. In the Reagan administration and elsewhere, as a matter of fact, of course.
Yeah, but this current administration doesn't understand. The foolishness of this Ukraine thing is huge. I mean, the dumbest damn thing I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Well, the only thing that I can say about it, Steve, is an alternative theory, and that is that it is purposefully foolish and detrimental to our position, not simply that it's bumbling or incompetence or stupid. There is a method to the madness explanation to this that I think is
the idea was we were going to put NATO right at Russia's throat. And we're so smart, we can do this. And, you know, the Russians are dumb and their defense system is crumbling. And, you know, this is an easy shot. Let's do it. So we spent 4 years training the Ukrainian army.
A lot of mistakes on all fronts, that's for sure.
You're not kidding.
Steve, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Thank you for your time today, my friend, for the great work that you have done over your distinguished career and that you're rendering these days with us at the Center for Security.
Great to be with you, Frank. Thanks so much.
We'll talk with you soon. We'll be right back with more right after this.
Night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and a very special welcome to a man we've interviewed in the past, but not nearly often enough. But fortunately, you see him a lot, including Saturdays on this network, Real America's Voice, and you can hear him on an awful lot of other channels and platforms, including the USA Audio Network. His name is Wayne Allen Root. He is an irrepressible force of nature, a man who has written 16 books, I believe it is, including, very importantly, a brand new one, the title of which, The Great Patriot Boycott Book. Wayne, it is terrific to have you. Congratulations on this new book, and tell us what a boycott is.
Hey, Frank, great to be on your show. Great to see you on our network, Real America's Voice. We're teammates. That's a good thing. Trying to save America, and it's hard to save. And that's why I wrote the book, and the last two books, actually, because America is under attack from what seems like 1,000 directions at once, you know, death by 1,000 paper cuts, except this one's deeper than paper cuts. I think it's death from 1,000 giant knives, you know. It's
machetes.
Really, it's a disaster. Yeah. But anyway, look, I wrote a book 2 years ago called The Great Patriot Protest and Boycott Book. The new one's The Boycott. This was the boycott book, and it became a number one bestseller, and I listed the 116 worst companies in America that we should be boycotting, because when you spend your money with them or invest your money with them, they use it to destroy America and everything that patriots like us believe in. So it was a number one bestseller, and in the year and a half since it came out, the Great Patriot Protest and Boycott Book, over $1 trillion was lost in market cap by the companies I listed in this book. So obviously, the American people get it, and they're stopping spending their money or investing their money with these creeps. That's what I call them. You know, I'm not trying to be intellectual here. I'm trying to be common sense. We got to attack the bad guys and defund them, and we got to help the good guys. So I came out quite naturally with part two, and that is the Great Patriot Boycott book. These are the great companies to buy from. We did a year of research. We came up with 123 great American companies, including Real America's Voice TV Network, that really are on your side, for, you know, the side of patriots, conservatives, people of faith, Christians, all the good people that believe in America, American exceptionalism, capitalism, God, faith, prayer. All those people should be spending money with these companies so we can defund the left and we can fund the good companies that are on our side that will give to Republican, conservative, and pro-American, America First causes. So the Great Patriot Boycott book, all the great conservative companies to buy from and invest in your retirement account in. And I'm very proud. I think it's an incredible, powerful 1-2 punch. Here's who you defund. Here's who you fund.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, Wayne, because as you know, the term defund the left has been used for many years to talk about the importance of not putting government money into these various leftist entities. Some of them are not even companies. They're, you know, nonprofit organizations and the like that get billions in dollars of American taxpayer funds. But you're talking about, under the present circumstances, the government's probably hopeless in that regard. But you're talking about what individual Americans can do, either with the companies that they patronize or the companies that they invest in, or both.
Right. Yeah. And obviously, I think I made my point in the last 3 weeks, or maybe it's 2 weeks now. But Budweiser, I mean, look at what's happened to Anheuser-Busch, which owns Budweiser and Bud Light. We can make a big difference. But I'm always realistic, Frank, because as I said in a column I just put out, I think we attacked Budweiser and we destroyed $7 billion in market cap. And that doesn't include sales. That's just market cap on Wall Street. We made a $7 billion difference when they put a transgender spokesman in front of a, you know, in front of a beer whose audience is not transgender, whose audience is middle America, whose audience is, I love this country and I salute the flag. I'll never kneel for the flag. And they don't believe that transgenders should be the spokesman that speaks to them. And they think it's immoral. They think it's dysfunctional. They think it's mental illness. They certainly don't think it's supposed to be the spokesman. So we've made our point. But my point is, we're not going to put Anheuser-Busch out of business. They're the 94th most valuable company in the world. They're worth over $130 billion market cap. They have, I don't know, 50 brands, including 20 brands of beer. So we're not going to put them out of business by literally stop drinking Bud Light or Bud. But what we will do is we slap them hard and we brought them to their knees. We made them stand at attention. And now I think the message has been felt not just by Anheuser-Busch, but by all of corporate America. Every CEO in every boardroom and every board of directors is now going, oh my gosh, if we offend middle America, the silent majority, conservatives, Christians, we got a problem. We got to be real careful with our marketing from now on. Everyone should have gotten the message, not just Bud, not just Anheuser-Busch, but every beer company and every company, period, on Wall Street, that we can take you down and hurt you. Maybe we can't put you out of business, but we can hurt you. And by the way, not just hurt you, but the CEO could wind up getting fired, or the marketing executive fired, or all the above. Because in my last book, The Great Patriot Boycott book, several of the CEOs in my book are gone now. So they didn't just lose money and market cap. The CEOs got fired. So I think maybe Bud is on the trail for that.
It's extremely encouraging, I think. And,
yes.
And you know, I'm sure you hear this all the time too, as do I. People want to know, what can we do? If they feel the way you're talking about our country, if they feel not only have great love for it and belief in its exceptionalism and so on, but also that it's under assault. And that not least, the elites are part of the problem. The business elites, the media elites, the academic elites, the governing elites, many of whom, by the way, have been captured by the Chinese Communist Party as part of a very deliberate effort to take them out.
Well, I would argue,
you answer the question, this is what you can do, you're giving practical advice and power. Exactly.
Power
right.
And hope And I would argue that these companies are all owned by China. I would argue that our government is pretty much owned and bought and paid for by China. You know, China is brilliant because they realize you don't need to fight a war and kill 300 million Americans and spend all the money we've got, because wars bankrupt countries. China realized just a few billion dollars of seed money and you can buy off all the politicians and you can own them in your hip pocket. And also, without a war. This is an economic war, and it's a cheap economic war. What's a few billion dollars to a country? Instead of spending trillions on wars like we do, they said, let's just put $1 billion, sprinkle it among a bunch of Democrat politicians and a few rhino Republicans, and then we control the country. And of course, they control every corporation too, not necessarily because of bribes, but because the average major company that has, you know, they're on a public on Wall Street, Frank, they've got a quarterly number they got to hit. They need China to make that number look good. You know, there's 1.4 billion buyers in China. So they're bribed too.
Let me ask you about Wall Street, because that's a particular, fixation of mine. When we look at not just what's being done to help that mortal enemy of ours, in terms of underwriting what it's doing, but the fact that those Wall Street mavens, captured elites and so on, are doing it with the money of the people that you're talking about, those pensioners and other American patriots, who most of them have no idea their money's in China. And Wayne, let me just ask you, because I mean, you're a player, you're, you know, economically sophisticated entrepreneur and all that. In the event that there is a shooting war with China, and I'm worried that that's coming, whether they need to have it or not, they may opt for it because it's an opportunity they see beckoning them with Joe Biden in the White House and this captured by us. But let me just ask you, if there is a shooting war, what are the chances of those pension holders, or those in mutual funds and 401k plans and so on, actually getting their money out of China?
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, I fear the same thing as you. First of all, I fear that China will very soon, and I've been saying this for 2 years, will very soon make the decision, now's the time to attack Taiwan, because if Trump comes back in 2024, I should say wins in 2024, comes back in the White House in 2025, China has lost its window to attack Taiwan, and Trump will not allow that to happen, or will fight back in a way that makes it impossible for China to just, you know, walk in and take over. But with Biden as president, Taiwan is just screaming, like, you know, I live in Vegas, like a neon light on the Vegas Strip. Take us, you know, Biden will do nothing. So I think it will happen in the next year or so. They've got to make their move. And if they take Taiwan, they don't need to attack America. Taiwan makes every computer chip that we need in America. I think it's 94% of the computer chips that run
all the high-end ones.
Our cars, our computers, our laptops, our telephones, our cell phones. So we'd be dead, you know, if they tell us from now on we own them and we're not making them for you. If they were to withhold them because they're angry at us, our entire economy would cease to exist. It would just come to a grinding halt.
Right.
So
all the more important what you're laying out as a prescription for strengthening companies and other businesses that believe in America and that want it to succeed. And I want to thank you, Wayne Allen Root, not only for writing this terrific book, The Great Patriotic Boycott, but coming on our show to talk a little bit about it. I hope you'll do so again in the very near future. It's great to
I'd love to. The Great Patriot
You are,
Boycott
of course, of nature,
book.
As I said. There you
boycott
go.
The book. Great Patriot Boycott book. Good stuff. Thank you,
God bless you,
God bless you.
Good luck with it. We'll talk with you again very soon. We'll talk with the rest of you right after this short break. We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Biden administration says it has a problem with, quote, flagrant violations of our nation's sovereignty, unquote. That's the justification given for shutting down an overseas Chinese police station it says was operating illegally in New York City and arresting its alleged proprietors. Last September, a Spanish think tank alerted the world to this operation used to recruit, coerce, and repatriate Chinese nationals. Unfortunately, the far greater problem is that Team Biden is actively pursuing policies that will not only violate U.S. sovereignty, they will destroy it. In negotiations with the World Health Organization and the United Nations, the people doing business as Joe Biden are proposing to allow these organizations respectively to dictate what constitutes public health emergencies and crises here and what we must do about them. Our enemies call this global governance, but it's a formula for enslaving us. This is Frank Affney.
We're back, and I'm always pleased to be able to say we're joined by Kevin Freeman. He is our duty expert on economic warfare here at Securing America, among other places. His expertise in the subject has earned him, well, I think considerable acclaim, notably three best-selling books, Secret Weapon, Game Plan, and most recently, According to Plan. He is, among other things, a very formidable leader on the war of ideas about what you do to try to advance America's interests in specifically the economic warfare battle space. It's the subject of a television program he hosts, Economic War Room, with Kevin Freeman at Blaze TV and other platforms. It is also the guiding force behind a terrific enterprise called the National Investment Consultants, the National Security Investment Consultants Institute. It's a mouthful, but it's well worth getting to know. And Kevin is to be credited with helping Americans' investment managers understand the importance of investing patriotically and not in our enemies. Kevin Freeman, it's always good to have you with us. Welcome once again.
Thank you, Frank. Yeah, we use NSIC because National Security Investment Consultant is a mouthful.
It is a mouthful, but it comes better from you, that's for sure. Kevin, I wanted to call attention to something that you wrote back in 2012, I believe in American Legion magazine. I think it was under the title, The Warning No One Wanted to Hear. And you talked about a white paper that you did several years before that, 2009, sort of laying out what the country might well face in the way of economic warfare from an array of adversaries. The prescience of that piece is hard to overstate and extremely impressive. Just summarize for us quickly what you warned of and why more attention was not paid to it.
Yeah, well, actually, the actual title was The Message No One Wanted to Hear. And I'd been working inside the Pentagon through a mutual friend who's passed on, Rich Higgins, and others, to warn that we were in an economic war. There's no question now. I mean, we see what China's doing. We see attacks on the dollar. It's a regular report in the newspapers. But then it was quite shocking for people to imagine that China would be our adversary, number one, and number two, that they were fighting us economically. And number three, in particular, I said the end game for them would be to destroy the dollar as the world's reserve currency. And I listed the history with unrestricted warfare. I walked through what had happened in the 2008 collapse, and I said their goal is to displace the dollar. And no one believed me. Frank, you were there when I shared it with you, and you actually introduced it to some of our mutual colleagues at the time who scoffed and said, no, that's not possible. They'll never try it. But the goal was to end American economic power.
And you've been, I think, proven, again, not just prescient, but incredibly insightful, Kevin, because if they weren't using your playbook, you were just simply reporting on theirs. This has come to pass with a vengeance. Let me just ask you, you mentioned unrestricted warfare. We talk about it a lot on this program. You've taught me most of what I know about it. Just give us a short course on what that refers to and its relevance to this economic warfare piece, among other things.
Well, no one could see China as a formidable enemy back in 2008 because they said, well, they don't have a sufficient navy. They don't have sufficient nuclear arsenal. They listed all the reasons, thinking with, as they described it, slave-like thinking to traditional warfare. Well, unrestricted warfare says anything can be a weapon. One of the quotes in is a single man-made stock market crash. The idea of releasing a biological weapon could be a means of warfare. All of the things, culture warfare, infiltrating the government, bribing officials, all of these were listed as forms of warfare in this book, Unrestricted Warfare. You know, the kind of things that we're seeing play out in the headlines today were things they were thinking about 20 years ago or 24 years ago now when they wrote this book.
Well, but more to the point, that they were actually weaponizing and employing in that period, if not before, and ever since. And even today, Kevin, I think aside from your good self and our Committee on the Present Danger China, of which you are an important member, and a relatively small number of others, we're still seeing too few Americans really understanding the nature of this warfare, let alone the costs. I've just completed a new book, as you know, called The Indictment, which tries to make the case that when you look at what they were talking about doing and have now done, it translates into 8 different war crimes against our country. Yet I think that most of us are still largely oblivious to it. The cumulative effect of this is economic warfare. And just give us a very short characterization of how you see us faring in that war at the moment, Kevin.
Well, Frank, the worst of it is that we're paying for all of it. We're paying for it with our investments. We're paying for it with our consumption. We're paying for it across the board. So when we buy something made in China, we have to realize the company that made that is by law in China required to serve the Chinese Communist Party. When we invest in a Chinese company, we're giving them the capital that they're using to steal our intellectual property, that they're using to manipulate our stock markets, that they're using to fund their campaigns to bribe officials. All of that we're paying for. And the first and most important thing we can do about it is stop funding the Chinese Communist Party.
Amen. We just talked about this a little with Wayne Allyn Root in the previous segment, his point being that, you know, we've got American companies that he thinks we ought to be boycotting, subject of a best-selling book he wrote previously to the current one, which is very much, I think, aligned with the work you're doing at the NSIC, namely boycotting, as he puts it, patriotic boycotting, working with investing in otherwise, you know, being customers of companies that are actually on our side. This is a subject to which we will return momentarily with Kevin Freeman, who has a brilliant idea that is now advancing in the Texas state legislature about how we can invest in currency that is on our side as well. Stay tuned for that right after this. We're back. We are visiting with one of our favorite guests, a regular here, I'm happy to say, at Securing America, the host of his own television program, Economic War Room, with Kevin Freeman, and that would, of course, be Kevin Freeman. Kevin, you set the stage very nicely by your discussion of the warnings that you've sounded over many, many years concerning what our enemies are doing in what, as you are fond of saying, they think of as a battle space, namely economic warfare, financial and other dimensions of it as well. You have been giving over this period considerable thought to the problem that the effect of attacking the dollar, displacing it as the reserve currency, would be devastating to our country. And that was really before we started having to worry, in addition to what our own government has in mind for our currency, namely the central bank digital currency idea. Tee all that up for us as an introduction to your new and very important initiative in the Texas State Legislature underway at the moment.
Yeah, well, we have three distinct threats to our currency, and currency meaning the ability for us to buy and sell and spend and do. It's an essential to economics. One of those threats in 2018 that I identified would be China and others that want to end American power, because the American dollar has been a symbol of power around the world. It's perhaps our greatest export. You could take a $20 bill anywhere in the world and people will accept it. Well, yesterday they would accept it. Now today they're questioning whether they want that. So that's one threat, is the foreign threat to displace the dollar. The second threat is a domestic threat, and it's one of profligate government spending. In 2008, we had $10 trillion in debt. We have over $32 trillion in debt today. So we've more than tripled our outstanding debt with no end in sight, higher interest rates. That's a threat to the dollar, because who's going to want our dollar if we just keep printing money? It's like Weimar Germany. It's like Zimbabwe. It's like Argentina. We're not there yet, but we're making it easy for our enemies. And then the third threat that you mentioned, which is a very serious threat, is the government themselves taking advantage of their own horrific attack on the dollar to use as an opportunity to institute a digital currency that would be central bank digital currency, which they have themselves called programmable money. I call it weaponized money, where they can literally control every aspect of spending. If you,
Everybody's.
Right. If you receive a digital currency as payment, then they can turn it on or turn it off at will. They can say you're too heavy, therefore you can't buy a cheeseburger. They can determine if you can be locked down to your community. You can only spend it in your own zip code. You can't spend it past a certain time or before a certain time. And by the way, if you say the wrong thing on the internet, they can just take some out of your account and use it for reparations or whatever they want to do. It's literal, complete control over the currency. And that is ultimately maybe the largest threat, and it's derived from the other two. If China displaces the dollar, they want to put their digital currency in, so we'll come back with ours. Terrible, awful.
Yeah. How far along is this central bank digital currency idea in this country, Kevin?
Well, the operating system for it is FedNow, which is going to be released in July. They've said it's coming out in July. And then central bank digital currency is the source code. And they're going to operate in every bank, and they will literally have the ability to turn all of our existing money. It is a war on cash. They'll eliminate cash. That's the intention. And everything will be digital under their control.
This is terrifying. And especially when you talk about the possibility of this somehow being interoperable with other governments' central bank digital currencies, the possibility for global governance coming out of it, which I think of as really just a scheme for enslaving us all, is very, very worrying and very much, I think, in prospect. So, Kevin, quickly, talk to us about an idea that you have been nurturing and now are seeing some, I think, promising movement on in your state's legislature in Texas.
Yeah, well, the idea is very simple. The Constitution says only the federal government can coin money, but states can make gold and silver coins legal money, tender, within their state. Well, when you combine that with modern technology, I can go on my iPhone and I can get an app that I can buy and sell and use gold and silver right now, commercially. If Texas adopts our proposal, what they will do is they will combine modern technology with the intention of the founders and their good idea to make gold and silver. Then we can trade in gold and silver. It will not be central bank digital currency. It will not be under the watchful eye of the federal government. In fact, we put privacy provisions in Texas banking laws. We couldn't even look at the accounts if we wanted to without a court order. So it is privacy. It is elimination of this unlimited printing of money because it's limited to gold and silver. It's functional today. And you can support this at transactionalgold.com. Transactionalgold.com is a place to do a petition and send people information about this and tell every member of the Texas legislature, I'd like to see this pass. And we don't have it locked in, but we are getting good word finally that the Texas legislature is waking up and supporting this really good idea whose time has come.
Wow, how exciting. And Kevin, people obviously responding to transactionalgold.com would be of greatest interest, I assume, to those Texas state legislators if they are constituents in Texas. But there's actually a reason why they should be paying attention, even if it's other Americans as well, is there not?
Right. This will be available and useful to anyone based on prior court rulings. This would be available to anyone in the United States who wanted to use it. Beyond that, though, other states can join Texas in adopting what would be a comprehensive, complete monetary system that would not be linked to CBDC or government spending that's gone off the rails.
Fantastic. Kevin, we have to leave it at that. People I know can find out much more about all of this at your very, very important web platform, economicwarroom.com. Obviously, also check out Texas Gold.
Transactionalgold.com.
Amen. Kevin, thanks for joining us. Come back to us soon with updates on all of this. I hope the rest of you will do the same tomorrow. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Go forth and multiply.